history final. Bang!
Hey everybody, welcome to another edition of the Announcer's Journal. I'm your host, Todd Harris, and I am excited about this week's show. We've got the near two decades voice of the UFC, now the lead announcer with Bellator, my good friend Michael Goldberg. Mike, we are catching up to you in warm Phoenix, Arizona, understand.
Warm and about 2 weeks without air conditioning at a time in which we are not supposed to leave the house, Todd. And so it was perfect timing, if you will. But still time to talk to you. And when you kind of look at what you and I've been able to do, and even in the sport of MMA, I would go ahead and just throw it out there and be corny. We are virtually identical in what we've been able to do over the years.
No question about it. I want to jump into this because I don't think a lot of people know your background. You're a Midwest kid. I know you went to University of Miami of Ohio and grew up in that area. And you kind of came up in broadcasting as a stick and ball guy, kind of like me. How did you make the transition over to the MMA world?
Bruce Connell, two words, plain and simple. And may he rest in peace.
The best.
He is the best. And, you know, Todd, they always say, you know, if you can count on one hand, people who you have in your life that are true blood brothers, that truly have your back, that would never, ever let you down. And thus, you would never let them down.
Yep.
That's what Brucey was to me. And I met Bruce when I made the transition from Sports Channel Chicago to ESPN. And if anybody knows the last name Connell in the business, his father, Scotty, was one of the forefathers. If there was a Mount Rushmore of ESPN, Scotty Connell's head would be on it. And so their business, as you know, because you worked for Concom as well, Todd, Concom had the UFC back then. And it was the Renegade Sport, and Senator McCain was right. It was a little bit controversial, if you will. And Bruce Beck, who we all know, Bruce had done it for many years. And Bruce got his dream job. He got his dream job as the weekend anchor at NBC in New York. He had been at MSG for years with pretty much the same role as I had at Sports Channel. Mm-hmm. Sidelines for the big games, doing a lot of college stuff, and being able to do a lot of fun assignments. And when he got the job at NBC, then he could no longer freelance. Thus, he could no longer do the UFC. And Brucey called, Goldie. You remember Brucey, of course. Goldie, got a job for you. It's in Japan. You got to take a jiu-jitsu class. They'll pay you. Okay, well, I was kind of in between jobs then. So I was like, all I heard was Japan.
Yeah.
I don't know if I paid attention to jiu-jitsu class, but I heard the rate. And the rest was history. I would have never guessed it. I thought it was going to be, Todd, the opportunity to be with my friend Brucey.
Yeah.
6 to 8 times a year. Because even when I was with the Red Wings, Bruce did some of the away games for the Red Wings. So I was still working with Bruce, even in my post ESPN days. And through all the time in which I was still doing a ton of other stuff while the UFC was blossoming. But I knew nothing about it when I got to Japan. I, much like yourself, energy, enthusiasm, do your homework and tell some stories. And that's what I was able to do. And Big John McCarthy took me under his wing. Jeff Blatnick, another great one, may he rest in peace, was my broadcast partner. And you, of course, know him from NBC and the Olympics all those years. And, you know, 84 gold medalists. Mm-hmm. And I learned the sport through the years. I learned it. And all of a sudden, it exploded around not the country, not around North America, around the world. And Joe and I were able to be the messengers. And we were able to legitimize the sport and make it as popular as anything that I've ever been a part of. And so it really was. It was Brucey liking me loving Brucey, Brucey knowing my enthusiasm could be good for it. And the rest is history. And I'm still doing mixed martial arts 23 years later.
That's amazing. I've got to ask you, though, I know you have, and you're modest, and I don't want to embarrass you, but you had a lot of people make runs at you to try to pull you away from the UFC. And it may have brought you back to your roots or a bigger organization with three letters, but people made runs at you, but you stayed loyal to UFC. Was it hard for you? Because it always is for me turning down something to stay focused on one thing. Are you better off being a jack of all trade or a trade of all jacks? And you chose to stay with UFC. Are you glad you made that decision and became the voice of the sport?
Yes, absolutely, 100%. And at the time that other three-letter word came at me, the WWE, the offer was extremely appealing. I'm an old school Hulk Hogan guy. The production that the WWE has had for decades is, you know, as good as any. You know, every big show they do is a Super Bowl type production, right. Much like the UFC, much like what you had at the WEC and World Series of Fighting, working for our buddy George Greenberg. And the real key, Todd, was that I was already part of a family, and that there was an opportunity at the WWE, which would have been cool. And financially it was certainly appealing, but there were a lot of unknowns,
right,
and uncertainties. And I really loved my UFC family, starting with Bruce, mm-hmm, and working my way down to Anthony Giordano and, you know, to Niner, you know, Craig Conley, our stage manager, and April. And of course, working with Joe. And Joe was funny. He kept saying, "You're going to leave this and do porn?" I go, "No, I'm going to do pro wrestling." "You're not going to do porn, Goldie, are you?" So that's what he was calling it on a Monday night. And, you know, that was appealing as well. But I made the decision to stay, and it was the best decision that I ever made professionally. That's for sure.
We skip forward now, and we're in a crazy time with this global pandemic. Does it surprise you at all, knowing him as well as you do, that Dana is at the forefront just trying to knock the door down to get sports back on TV? And it took Disney executives to tell him to stand down. Otherwise, he probably would have put on 3 cards by now. But does it surprise you at all that this weekend, sports is really going to come back for Americans with UFC 249 in Florida?
Not at all. Not in the least. And it's funny because a lot of people ask me, what's this Fight Island thing? Are we really going to see this fight? Are they really going to do this? And I said numerous times, a dozen times, if not more, that don't forget that ESPN and ABC are owned by Disney.
Right.
And the Disney parks around the world are closed. When the rubber hits the road, I have a feeling that Disney is going to say, "No moss. We don't want to be that guy." Kind of like before Spike took us,
right,
way back when in the UFC. We're not going to be the ones to go out there and put our neck on the line. And when you read stuff a couple of weeks later, you do realize, and Dana was even quoted as saying that the reason they did not do that show, I guess it would have been about a month ago, right, Todd?
Yeah.
The reason they didn't do it was out of respect for their broadcast partners at ESPN. And so it did not surprise me that that was the reason. I think it was a blessing in disguise. As strong a personality as Dana is, and the statement in which he was hoping to make, mm-hmm, I believe would have backfired. I really do. I think it would have come down really badly, and it wouldn't have been worth it, because when all the other leagues are saying no, 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 and somebody wants to be that renegade and do something that everybody, including our president and people around the world, are dying from, that wasn't the time to do it, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the Disney stepping in and saying it's not the right time was a good time. This weekend, I mean, things are starting to lighten up here in the state of Arizona. Governor Ducey, he's just opening up a bunch of restaurants and hair salons and in different places. You're still eating outside, but there's a lift that's happened in the last few days. And so the timing of that for the UFC to have a show this weekend is much better than it would have been, in my opinion, a month ago. And I'll always be a UFC fan. Yeah. I have a ton of friends that are still there. And I could be sour, I could be all those things, but I'm not that person, nor are you. And the way I live my life is to take the good and move on, learn from the mistakes I've made, and try to be a better man each day. But I do think that they were going to stick their neck out a little bit too far, and it would have backfired. So I think it was a blessing in disguise. That said, am I surprised he was trying to do it? No. Am I surprised that they're the first this weekend? Absolutely not.
You know Dana really well. I don't even find him on his radar. I've had a few conversations with him through the years for the WEC and UFC and stuff like that. But you've been around so much, and people always ask me, what's Dana like? Is he like the guy that we see on TV? Is he that kind of person? And you know him maybe better than anyone other than inside his family. To me, he's such a fascinating, like a mad scientist, genius, maverick, all wrapped into one. And he's just full speed ahead.
He's Vince McMahon. Is really what he is. He's Vince McMahon, and he's taken on that persona and that personality. And quite honestly, he's taken it to a whole nother level.
Right.
And it was the Ultimate Fighter season 1. Do you want to be an effing fighter? Do you want to be an effing fighter? Over and over and over again. And you could see the character and the personality that is Dana White grow in front of all of our eyes on season one of The Ultimate Fighter. Dana was coming out of his shell. Yeah. Lorenzo Fertitta, Frank Fertitta, they were the brains, the money. Not that Dana wasn't, but they were the real, you know, concrete blocks mm-hmm. that built the UFC. But Lorenzo's a quiet guy, as you know. Mm-hmm. And Frank was off doing kind of Station Casino work, which was the family business for years. So Lorenzo didn't want to be that guy. That's not his personality. Dana eats it up and still eats it up. Has he taken it to the Conor McGregor level a few times? Or has Conor taken it to the
Dana
level?
Exactly, exactly.
Yes, yes. But it started on The Ultimate Fighter season one. And the one thing that I will say is that Dana being Dana and everybody wanting to hear from him, it makes it a consistent voice throughout two decades when you talk about the UFC. Because fighters come and go. Voices like you and I, good or bad, we come and go. And with that in mind, when you think UFC, you think Dana White. And Dana's career is going to end when he wants it to end at the UFC. And that, I think, is a bonus for the Ultimate Fighting Championship, is they've always had that one representative. While the fighters have changed and grown and personalities have gone here and there and bad and good and indifferent, Dana has always been that man. But it was The Ultimate Fighter one, that red light went on, and just like it was decades ago, bud. He got the fever, but I think he got a higher temperature than you and I've ever had.
We're talking with Mike Goldberg here on the Announcer's Journal. Mike, I'm going to throw this one at you. For anyone out there that has a sports bucket list, it's a Super Bowl, the World Series, you must go to a major UFC fight sometime in your life, because when it gets ready for the main event of the night, the electricity in the building is like, I mean, I've been to some big events before, but it is right up there. And I know you've been asked this question a lot, biggest fight you've ever been involved in. If you think back on your nearly two decades at the mic for the UFC, biggest fight you've ever called where you just thought, this is enormous.
I would say that there are many. One lasted about, I think, 66 seconds. It was our debut on the Big Fox. Mm-hmm. Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez. And I had worked for Fox throughout the years. As you know, I'd been in their college football studio. I had been at their affiliates doing hockey. But we were on the Big Fox. And Kurt Menefee was at the desk, and he was talking to the boys. And all of a sudden, let's go down to Goldie and Joe for the fight. The heavyweight title is on the line. Goldie, take it away. And we're on the Big Fox. We're so happy. In a minute six or whatever it was later, the fight was over. Back to you guys. Like, all right. Thank God we don't get paid by the word.
Yeah.
If we did, I'd be extremely rich, and Joe would be even richer than he is already. But that is definitely one of the highlights, is when we hit the Big Fox. Mm-hmm. When we had 55,000 in the Sky Dome in Toronto.
Was that the GSP fight? I'm trying to think back on that.
It was.
Because I remember I was being there as a pre-host or something with Kenny Florian and all of that. But I remember that arena and the light show that they had when GSP came in with the Canadian flags, and it was unbelievable.
I spent a lot of time during that show, Todd, just looking up and looking around. Yeah. And I'd been there for baseball games. I had called the CFL and ESPN out of there. And it'll always be the Sky Dome to me, but I just went, wow. And if anybody knows me, you know, they keep track of how many times I have to go to the bathroom during a show. There was a drinking game. Well, the only bad part about that show is the bathroom was like a mile and a half away.
Yeah, it's so big.
So I had to go on a full sprint, you know, and then I'd come back and be like, heart, tail of the tape, Joe, take it. And then I'd be okay. But that would be a big one. First time in Madison Square Garden with Conor McGregor, the weigh-ins were
insane,
bigger than the majority of the events that you and I have been blessed to be part of. I looked around, I said, when did we get to Dublin? When the heck did we get to Dublin? And so Conor being involved was obviously huge fights. And anything that had to do with Anderson Silva back in the day was extremely appealing. John Jones in Newark, when he filled in at the last second for Shogun and became the youngest champion in UFC history. And then you go to the ones like Diego Sanchez and Gilbert Melendez. where they just bit down on the mouthpiece and they beat the living crap out of each other and shook hands all bloody afterwards. It wasn't brutality. It was the highest level of competition and the highest level of respect when the fight was over. And so that indeed was another one that I'll never forget.
Yeah.
And then the two biggest ones, at least that I can think of now, Todd, I would say would be when Ronda got beat by Holly Holm, Melbourne, Australia. Mm-hmm. And I said on the air, and Joe still makes fun of me, and people thought it was like a silly statement. I said, it takes a lot of energy to be a rock star. And the backstory on that fight is that fight took place in, I want to say, November. And it was supposed to take place in January. Robbie Lawler was set to fight for the title in November. Robbie got hurt. So this was the third title fight for Ronda in 9 months. And she was saying yes to everything. Single interview. Yeah. And Joe even made a comment about that she didn't look as ripped or in shape or prepared mentally. Not so much mentally, but physically, she didn't look the same before that fight. And Holly Holm had the greatest quote of all. She said, Ronda hasn't been hit yet. Ronda has not been hit. Let's see what happens when Ronda gets hit. Holly hit her. Ronda went to respond and she got hit a couple more times. I knew the fight was going to go Holly's way when Ronda tried to toss her and get ready for that arm bar, and Holly wasn't going anywhere. And from there, the rest is history. So that one was absolutely crazy. And I will say it takes a lot of energy to be a rock star because Ronda was, and she was saying yes to everything. And then you look at the future after that, Todd, she did cut back on her interviews and everything that goes along with it. And then UFC 199, the night after Muhammad Ali, the great Muhammad Ali had passed away. Mm-hmm. We had his son-in-law, Kevin Casey, on the card. The forum in Inglewood, California, 27th UFC fight, first title fight for Michael Bisping. Ultimate Fighter winner,
the count.
First Brit to really be a star, and he knocks out Luke Rockhold. That was absolutely amazing, especially given how long it took for a fighter who was that successful to get his shot at UFC gold. And not only did he win it, he knocked out his opponent, and he did it on short notice.
Yeah, that was an amazing one. Man, you've got so many great fights. I think back, and I'm like, oh, I remember that. I remember that. I remember your call on that. I want to talk to you about the organizations and the sport of MMA. I mean, I was lucky enough to be a part of the WEC, which a lot of people don't know was part of the UFC. We were the smaller fighters, the smaller outfit, but I really enjoyed working with guys like Frank Mir and Kenny Florian and all that stuff and learned so much, and then watching you and Joe do your thing. But as you look at now, Bellator, World Series of Fighting, UFC, is there room for more organizations, or do you see a point somewhere, Mike, where they're all going to just come together and it's going to be the NFL?
That's a great question, Todd. I will tell you this, that the talent level at Bellator, the upper echelon level, it is good. Mm-hmm. Exactly. It is very good. And I will put our top five guys and girls in each division against the top five anywhere in the world. B1 championship, whatever it may be. World Series of Fighting. Lance Palmer could be a champion in whatever organization Lance Palmer wants to fight in. And for Rory McDonald to go to the World Series of Fighting, that's a statement right there. That tells me they're doing things right. And, you know, I think the tournament style that they did, the $1 million to make it the same sport, but to make it a different format was brilliant. And to put it on Thursday nights was absolutely spectacular. You're going to run out of great fighters at a certain point. You're going to oversaturate the market. And arguably, I think that a lot of people would say there's actually too many UFCs, quote unquote, now. That said, you're not being asked to pay $60 every time you watch the UFC. But you look forward to the big ones, much like we did in the past that were pay-per-views. There are enough great fighters to have more than one great organization, but there are not enough household names and true superstars that just gravitate, you know, their abilities, and they capture you and they bring you to the screen and they're can't miss TV. There's not enough of those, you know, in this organization, in most sports, Todd, as you know, to get somebody to watch every single fight. Because you get down to the third or fourth fight in most of these organizations, And these guys and girls have done this their entire life. It is a dream come true to fight in the Octagon or the Bellator cage or the World Series of Fighting cage or whatever it might be, and one championship halfway around the world. It is their dream come true. They're in the big show, but there's only so many big spots. And so to answer your question, you know, maybe it would be cool if we had one organization, which was the NFL, and you had to qualify to make yourself an NFL fighter. And then the second tier would be a CFL fighter. And last time I checked, there were some great athletes in the CFL. Yeah. A lot of them were those tweeners in college though, right? They didn't have the size or the speed or whatever it is. I think that that would be a really cool thing to say. My hope in the future, Todd, is that we will see organizations go champion against champion, top contender against top contender, and really bring the fans around the world the fights they truly want to see, which is something that Dana's talked about for years. So to answer your question, yes, I believe there's enough top talent for one NFL type league, but there has to be others for the fighters to get themselves the opportunity to train full time, to make some money, to do what they need to do, to get better, to play on Sundays, if you will, which is the UFC and Bellator. That's where you're playing on Sundays.
We're visiting with Mike Goldberg here on the Announcer's Journal, the lead voice of Bellator. He's a pro's pro, and he leads me perfectly into the next question. My friend, UFC 249, and I've been a long proponent of, I think there's quality and quantity, and I agree with you. I think in recent years, we've kind of gone to quantity and less quality, because I think back in the day when the UFC put on a pay-per-view, it was must-see. It was like, oh, there's no question I'm buying this.
No question.
And now there's some where you might see and go, that one doesn't interest me as much. But UFC 249 is, and you know, we both work for different organizations, and I don't have a problem saying it, this is a huge card. Not because it's coming out of the pandemic, but you look at the names, a lot of these guys you know really well, this is a big, big card.
No question about it. And I see, you know, champ Henry Cejudo up at Neuroforce One.
There you go.
I'm a fine representative. I got my Neuroforce bio strap on, and Henry's a beast. I mean, Dom has been a champion in all organizations for a lifetime. It's been a long time since he's fought. It is a stacked card, and it's the kind of card that the world needs right now. I wish that Khabib could get out of Russia.
Yeah.
And maybe, I don't know if Disney would have thought differently if Khabib was available. Probably not, and rightfully so. They made the right decision. But I think that was a reason back then that maybe Dana and them took the foot off the pedal a little bit too, because you really didn't have the fight that everybody was looking forward to seeing. You didn't have that true title fight that everybody has been talking about for months and months and years for years, Todd. And to say that they are coming back with a stacked card would actually be an understatement. And that's the kind of cards that you're absolutely right, bud. That's the kind of cards that I was blessed to call those type of fight cards, if you will, for a decade and a half. Because Joe and I always were blessed to do the big shows. And for a while, we did all the shows. And we did the big ones. And they were, you're exactly right, they were must-see TV. Mm. And you got on that pay-per-view. And man, there were five of them in there that even if the main event wasn't great, there was something and some matchup in those 10 fighters that were going to make that walk to the Octagon that was going to leave a huge memory for everyone around the world that was watching at that particular time. And that's why these cards are stacked. That's why the sport of MMA is different than others. You have a Super Bowl that, you know, does not, you know, really live up to expectations. There's nothing you can do about it. You have a pay-per-view main event where there might be an injury or an eye poke. We've seen it all. We've seen the groin shot. You and I've called it all. And you go, man, that really stunk. But what about Lyoto Machida and his fight in the co-main event? He kicked Randy Couture in the face, or Anderson kicked Vitor in the face.
Yeah.
You always had that as part of the pay-per-view. And so, yeah, I mean, the UFC's had time to come back with a big one, and they certainly are coming back with a bang.
All right. That being said, my usual thing is if I'm going to buy a fight, And no, people out there, I don't get it for free. I'm going to buy a fight. It's got to be at least two or three fights that I really want to see. This one, I'm up at 4 and 5 that I really want to see. And I picked 3 or 4 to go with you. Just quick response, what you think. WEC alums, you got Pettis going against Cowboy Cerrone. This just makes me feel so good inside.
It's unbelievable. And you know, I've always been very close with Duke Rufus. He and Mark Delagrotti were the guys who taught me Muay Thai back in the day. Duke's a good Midwesterner like myself. He's a Milwaukee boy. I remember, and I was talking to Sergio, you know, I remember when Serge broke in, and now he's one of our fighters. Sergio Pettis is in Bellator. And I could not be happier because I love the Pettis family. I love those guys. I watched Sergio in an amateur fight at a Harley Davidson dealership in Milwaukee when we were in town for a UFC celebrating like 125 years of Harley Davidson. And of course, Harley Davidson, the only motorcycle worthy of being in the octagon for all those years. Mm-hmm. And I love that. And I talked to Sergio about it. He goes, yeah, Goldie, you came to that fight. I've watched him grow up and I was there for the Showtime kick. You were on the call, I'm sure.
Off the cage,
right?
Yeah. Yep, the Matrix.
You were on the call. I was sitting right behind you, brother, because it was in Phoenix.
That's right. It's in your neighborhood. Right, that's right.
You. That's it. And it was funny because it was Benson and it was, you know, Anthony Pettis. And my ex was very close to Anthony and Duke because she'd known them for years. And I was close to both. We'd actually gone to Benson's wedding. And she started kind of cheering for the Pettis side. And I said, you can't in the middle here. You can't sit close to Song Henderson. You can't sit next to Julian Anderson. You can't sit next to the Henderson family and root for the Pettis family. You got to move over here. And it was absolutely spectacular and one of the greatest fights of all time. And so there's my Pettis part. Donald Cerrone, man, oh, man, I'll tell you what. The definition of fighter, yeah. The definition of entertainer, and the definition of a man who knows how to live life. And God love him. Absolutely love that guy. Always have. I love him in and out of the cage. And he is well deserving of everything that has come his way. And he's probably out on a wakeboard right now.
Oh, yeah.
You know, after weigh-ins. And he's having fun drinking his Budweiser. And he'll be ready to go toe-to-toe in a couple of nights, you know, against another, you know, great former champion in Anthony Pettis, the champion, you know, the WEC, as yeah. You know, because you called the fight. So, yeah, that is one for the history books. But Cerrone's the man. I absolutely love Donald Cerrone. I years ago, I had an appearance in Vancouver booked at a quote-unquote gentleman's club. And I decided that it probably wasn't in my best interest, but we had to get somebody who would do it. And I mentioned something to Cowboy and he goes, I was going there anyway for free. They're going to pay me to go. And he went and he didn't get paid for like a month. And so the person who was handling the event at the time called and got him double the money.
Nice.
And he was the happiest lad in the world. So that's my Donald Cerrone.
He's like the John Wayne guy. Of fighters, Cowboy Cerrone.
There's no question about it. That's
the best.
That's a great way to put it. Great.
Okay, let's talk about the co-main with Dominic Cruz and Henry Cejudo. This one has me going back and forth because, as you know, anyone that denies it, ring rust is real. And Dom hasn't fought, amen, I think, since 2016. But he's so talented and so fast, and you can't teach speed. But then there's Cejudo, which is, I mean, I've heard him called the goat killer. I mean, he is just, this is one you do not want to get up to go get a beverage or anything. You just have to stay the whole time.
There's no question about it. The TJ Dillashaw, Dominic Cruz fight years ago, is another one of the greatest fights ever because when TJ was able to, if you will, out-dom Dom, kind of like when Gonzaga crow-copped Crow-Cop,
right,
which again was a great moment, when TJ Dillashaw was able to take Dom's style and be a little bit better at it that night, that was amazing.
Yeah.
Not that TJ defeated Dom that night, but that he did it utilizing Dom's style.
Yeah.
Dom will always have that style. That footwork is like judo. To Rhonda. It's like broadcasting to you, my friend, any sport in the world, because you've done them all. And that is a sincere compliment, by the way.
You're the kindest.
And it is an interesting fight in that regard. Henry Cejudo is very, very different than TJ Dillashaw. And elusiveness and speed, everybody talks about it. But if Henry blasts a double or gets in that clinch and starts to work, we may see Dom in a bit of trouble. Are we going to see kind of the old Rocky Apollo, you know, moment when Apollo gets back in there with Drago and he slips and he hasn't been in there for a while. Look, he slipped. He's got ring rust. Maybe Dom's had a couple of surgeries. They both are very experienced champions. I think it's a spectacular fight. I will also say one thing, and you have been blessed, and I hope I get a chance, and I'll carry your bags. I will make your meals. I want to go to the Olympics. I want to do an Olympics. I haven't had a chance yet.
That'd be awesome.
You have been a mainstay. Oh, I would love it. Love it.
But let's see if we can't make that happen.
Thank you. There's something different about an Olympian and something very different about a gold medalist.
True.
There's a separation when it comes to that. And we've seen it with Daniel Cormier and everything he and his perfectly shaped body, as DC would talk about, has been able to achieve. And I can tell you firsthand, I watch Henry train now, and I see the level in which he's at with my buddy Andre Hicks and, you know, Kareem and all the great guys at Neuralforce. He's ready. I've no doubt that Dom's ready, but it may come into the younger, faster, more explosive Henry Cejudo in the co-main event. But it is certainly tough to find Dom, tougher to hit him, and tougher to take him down. And it will always be that way. And Henry's going to have to solve that puzzle.
And I know the fans here on the Announcers Journal, speaking with Mike Goldberg, want to get your take. This fight is so good. So good, with Tony Ferguson taking on Justin Gaethje, who I know well from back in the WSOF days.
Yeah.
He only knows one speed, but Tony Ferguson is a class act fighter. I mean, he is not to be trifled with. He's a nightmare for anyone to step in. So Gaethje seems like the perfect guy to say, what the heck, I'll go fight him. And this could be, I could see each of them doing the full Rocky and Apollo Creed, hitting each other at the same time and knocking each other out at the same time. But this could be one of the great fights of the year.
Kind of like Dan Hardy, Carlos Condit. I almost called the fight wrong. I thought the other guy had won. I didn't know who connected first. They had hit that shot at the same time. Justin Gaethje is a guy who just, he is what he is. He's going to go in there and he's going to look for the home run hit. And he's fought his friends. He's beaten his friends. Cowboy, you know, and he had the relationship. He's come from the other side. Going back to what you said before about the organizations and how they break down, Tony Ferguson is the perfect example of the guy who was at the grocery store, then played in the Arena League, and then won a Super Bowl.
Yep.
And I know you know who I'm talking about.
Yep.
And I actually called his games on ESPN when he was in Iowa with the Barnstormers, won Kurt Warner. I called his games. That's Tony Ferguson, because when I was there and Tony was breaking in, Tony was good. Tony was very good, but Tony wasn't elite yet. And of course, now he is. And his striking is absolutely spectacular. It's on point. He's always in great condition. He's a lot of fun to watch. The volume in which he can generate is unmatched by 99% of the fighters in the world. And I think that's going to be the big thing. Punches and bunches, moving and angles for Tony against Justin, looking for that big shot. And it only takes one with those little gloves, as you and I know. But Tony really has the ability to literally light people up. And it's been really fun. And even as a fan the last few years, Todd, to watch Tony Ferguson go from the AFL, if you will, to the CFL, and now not only in the NFL, fighting on Sundays, quote unquote, and doing it at the highest level. That's pretty cool. I like to see success stories like that. I think Tony brings more weapons, but they both bring the same amount of courage and guts and determination and a no-quit attitude. And maybe we will find ourselves with another Diego Sanchez, Gilbert Melendez type of war. And everyone in the world would welcome that anytime. And we all could use a little bit of entertainment inside our houses right now. I can only watch season 3 of Ozark another 5-6 times. It's awesome. And I will watch it again probably today. But I am looking forward to watching something different.
All right, Mike, before I let you go, I got to talk about Bellator. What do you know? What have you heard from Scott? What plans can you reveal to the fans of what you know that going forward with that schedule? Because I know it's an organization that a lot of people follow and really like to hear you on the mic.
No, thank you for that, Todd. And I've had a blast moving over. And the nice thing for me is John Norton, who, again, you worked with a ton. Norty's my producer. Norty's the best. Norty's my producer. I always say to Norty, a hockey player, wait, didn't your older brother, didn't Jeff play in the NHL? Wait, didn't...
Was it Scott?
Wait, didn't Brad play in the NHL? Wait, John, oh yeah, you're a producer in the NHL. So Norty and I go way back. And Norty, Todd, Norty learned and was taught TV by Brucey.
Yep.
Bruce Connell
yep.
taught John Norton television in the 90s in the NHL trucks. And Norty's a great person, and he will tell you that without hesitation. Mm-hmm. He will tell you that. And another thing I love about him. So I'm back at Spike, if you will, and now it's Paramount, but I'm back with family is my point, with Fish and all the guys that you've worked with.
Sure.
And so I've seen Scott Coker do amazing things in the couple of years that I've been there. The plan as it is right now is to utilize the advantage of being owned by Viacom, CBS / Paramount, and going to a movie lot and putting on a fight. Mm-hmm. And I hope we put together 6 fights and air them over a period of time and get them in the books, just because we don't know what's going to happen. We sure. may be back and then not back the way that the world is right now. And I could use the 6 checks. I'm not lying. I could use making up for what's been a quiet couple of months. And I think we're going to fire it up really hard once we do come back, bud, because everybody needs to work mm-hmm. in this world, and everyone on our crew needs to. And it's not just the television people, but it's the guys who build the cage. It's the production. It's the engineers. It's the fighters. The fighters aren't fighting. The fighters aren't making money. And so Scott will come back aggressively when we return. And what he's saying is July, but he will come back responsibly. And that's the thing about Scott Coker is he will do it responsibly, but he will do it aggressively because he's got a huge heart and he wants to take care of every single person who makes a living affiliated with Bellator MMA. And so if it's a movie lot, if it's an empty building, it doesn't matter. It will be safe, it will be stacked, and it will be frequent. And it may be a blessing in disguise, because the one thing about Bellator is we've had some holes in our schedule. And in this time of the pandemic and even prior, CBS, you know, they got married again. The divorce, they're back. They're yeah. married with Viacom again. And so there's different media outlets in which we may be able to air our shows on as well. So it's an extremely exciting time for Bellator that's being put on hold. But we may come in July and just not overdo it, but be consistent enough to make some serious noise and really make another move towards closing that gap to that other organization. And that's the first time I said that, which I think has already been closed. And I'm greatly looking forward to it. And I will tell you, with Norty in my ear as a broadcaster and the fights in a cage and Big John McCarthy as my broadcast partner, as much as you would think, wow, you're not at the UFC, you're at Bellator, I'm doing the same exact thing right. that I've loved for the past 2 decades. I proudly represent my boy, John Kavanaugh, with my SBG shirt on. And, you know, love going to Dublin and doing shows. So we're planning on July, the last that, you know, Scott has talked about. And if it's a movie lot, it's a movie lot. And if not, we'll see where we go from there. Ironically, our show, our first show on the calendar after the Mohegan show was to be in San Jose Saturday night, tomorrow, was Ryan Bader defending his belt at 205 and Gegard Mousasi and Douglas Lima battling. Douglas Lima coming up from 170, who's one of those guys who I kind of alluded to earlier who could be a champion in any organization in the world, as could Gegard Mousasi, needless to say. So our big one was supposed to be tomorrow night as well. It's been pushed back. It was pushed back a long time ago. But when we do come back, it's going to be, you know, pedal to the metal, full throttle, and it's going to be a ton of fun. And I'll tell you how quiet it's been, and you can definitely relate to this. Scott Fishman called me about 3 days ago. Goldie, I need a favor. We need a bridge because we're re-airing some of our shows on CBS Sports Network with the new affiliation. I need a bridge to get from one fight to another, just like the old UFC Unleashed days and you redoing, you know, WEC replays. And I have not been that excited to do a voiceover. And when did I start this business? I've not been that excited to do a voiceover from my kitchen in 20 years. Yeah. I was so happy it lasted for 3 days. I'm still smiling about it.
My thanks to Mike Goldberg for joining us here on the Announcer's Journal. Goldie, I can't tell you how much I appreciate talking to you and you taking the time, and wish you nothing but the best for you and yours. Stay healthy, and I can't wait to see and hear you back on the air with Bellator.
Pod, thank you for that and for always being a great person. When I got your text, first and foremost, having this opportunity was great, but it was really cool just to hear from you. And I am a fan. I'm a Todd Harris fan. I've always been a Todd Harris fan. I'm extremely, extremely respectful and extremely impressed with all the different sports that you've been able to not just call, but call brilliantly over the years. I did my sky surfing at the first Extreme Games, but you've done it all, my friend. And you've done it all with class. You've done it all with the proper preparation and enthusiasm. And like I said, I'm a Todd Harris fan. I'll always be one of your friends.
Thanks so much, brother. I appreciate it. And you stay well.
You too, my friend. Everybody stay well. Everybody stay healthy. And hopefully we'll see you soon inside the Bellator cage.
So that'll do it for another edition of the Announcer's Journal. My thanks to Goldie, Mike Goldberg, the voice of MMA. And folks, like Goldie would say,
it is all over, just like that.